When I started out to the idea I had for this reflection in kind of coming back at the end of summer was to just share three anecdotes with you and then tie it together in the end. It turned out I needed to talk to you about things that have happened to me and my health. But then I got thinking about tying it all to the bigger picture and seeing how it all fit in a bigger picture. And it got a little more complex and a little drier. So this is what got written and sorted out. But it's all in there. And I couldn't let it go. So stick with me. Thank you, Bill. More often than not, my summer feeling really begins near the end of June. I leave and attend the General Assembly of our Unitarian Universalist Association. At that assembly, you find out what are the pressing issues confronting our congregations and our world, and you find out how we are approaching all these things in a hopeful way. It's also the governing gathering of our voluntary association of congregations. There's nobody telling us we have to be together. We just come together and all the time reform ourselves in this way. This year it was in Portland, Oregon. Yeah. It's a wonderful place to be on its own. I still wish I'd been there. But there were over 4,500 Unitarian Universalists who went. And I wasn't one of them because of the health reasons, which many of you have heard about, a little about, and about which I'll say more later. But it turned out that during this summer, not only did we stay here, but we lived out what they were talking about and encouraging us all to do at the gathering in Portland. We weren't living it because we'd heard it there, but because of what just had been emerging from our community and our faith here, right here in Hendersonville, North Carolina, in the mountains of Western Carolina. We are creating opportunities for action in this place. And as part of this congregation, you are a very real part of a larger movement. You're also a very real part of something larger than yourselves, which only exists because you create it and make it be there. So how affirming and exciting and encouraging and inspiring can that be? Or how affirming and exciting and encouraging and inspiring is that? And then how deep and moving and sad and serious and concerning is all that we are responding to as well. Be sure to read the fall issue of the UU World magazine. It just came out last week. Many of you got it in the mail. And if you didn't and would like to have a copy, we can get a copy to you. And the heading is, "We Light This Flame, General Assembly Affirms Black Lives Matter." Read it to just get a sense of the tone and content of General Assembly. This is the movement that you are a part of. Read President Peter Morales' column. It's called "A Mixture of Triumph and Pain." In it, he holds up the progress and celebration of the Supreme Court's ruling that occurred on the Friday of General Assembly that ordered states to recognize same-sex marriage. How exciting was that? And then he contrasts it with the resurgence and violence of racism. "We came to GA," he says, "with the memory of the murders in Charleston fresh and raw. Beyond violent racism is the pernicious mutant racism that disguises itself as, quote, preventing voter fraud or a war on drugs. The contrast is stark." And then he goes on to say that as stark as the contrast may be, we should not ignore hopeful signs. In his list of hopeful signs, he holds up what we are doing in North Carolina, and he encourages us to keep on doing it. Quote, "The persistent commitment of so many Unitarian Universalists to the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina is heartening." The Reverend Marlon Lavenhar, the senior minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, began his sermon at the General Assembly's Service of the Living Tradition by observing that this church year stretched from Ferguson to Charleston. And then on the final afternoon, the assembly passed an action of immediate witness which pledged support for the Black Lives Matter movement. The fight for civil rights and equality is as real today as it was decades ago, it says. It declares and it urges congregations to join the fight for racial justice against the harsh racist practices to which many Black people are exposed. Another major focus of the assembly, and not one disconnected from the others, as we hear if we listen closely to Pope Francis in our reading, was that of climate justice. Delegates passed an action of immediate witness urging Unitarian Universalist support for climate justice campaigns. They included the Lummi Nation's opposition to the proposed Gateway Pacific Terminal. That's a big coal export facility bordering its lands in Washington State. If you think about it, these actions of immediate witness, if acted upon, are not just actions or activities outside ourselves in which we might participate. They are faith as a verb. They are meaning-making. They are meaning itself. They are life. They are meaningful living enacted. This summer has been a summer of hopeful, meaningful action in which all of us have participated by being part of this community. We all have reason to take notice. We all have reason to take heart. So let's begin with the support for climate justice. Addressing climate change is one hopeful step for addressing what Pope Francis calls the ethical, cultural, and spiritual crisis of modernity, which he says endangers the dignity of us all. Is it a problem that sounds too big to consider? Is it a problem that sounds too big for you to do anything to make a difference? What's that phrase? Take heart. A small group of your fellow congregants got together and did the work to create the opportunity for each and every one of us to begin to play our part to limit climate change. They created the opportunity to take advantage of tax credits before they expired and to put solar panels on the roof of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Hendersonville. And now you hear it's going to happen before the end of the year. When I talked to the first gathering that was organized to see if there was enough interest to ask the board to commit to the project, I began by addressing the financial questions, but then I said that this could not be reduced simply to numbers and business. It isn't about fundraising. It is an opportunity. It is actually a space for meaning and making a visual statement of who we are. There's that old Unitarian Universalist joke about people on a path and they come to a sign and a fork in the road and the sign says, "This way to heaven, this way to a conversation about heaven." Right. Yeah, okay. And guess who's on the path going to the conversation? So when we begin to have that conversation, we get into the details about things. And I said, yes, as some people say, we do need an overall building plan. We're developing one. We do, but while we're doing it, we need solar panels. And we need to take advantage of these tax credits while they exist. When we hear about how much money is still left to raise, I sort of cringe, because this isn't so much the congregation trying to raise money. That is, it's not this congregation, church, asking for money again. It's not that. It's the accomplishment of a group of volunteers who spent their time and organized an opportunity for all of us to do what we feel like we should be doing in the first place. An opportunity as a community to fight climate change. An opportunity for individuals who might not be able to do it otherwise to be a part of a solar panel installation. An opportunity to make a visual, practical statement that we not only care about the future, we are committed to changing it. An opportunity to show visibly not say in a conversation about heaven that we are a community of hope, with hope, and for hope? Bill McKibben says that Pope Francis is at his most rigorous when he insists that we must prefer the common good to individual advancement in particular. He says the Pope insists that intergenerational solidarity is not optional, but rather a basic question of justice, since the world we have received also belongs to those who will follow us. The solar panels are a statement and practice of intergenerational solidarity. When I met with the group called Soul Foods, which was people, young adults from 11th grade to 30, you know the one thing they said would make the most difference for the attractiveness or the statement of this congregation? Seeing solar panels on the roof of the congregation. How many people have thought about putting solar panels on your own roof at some point? How many people, raise your hands, have just thought about it, considered it? How many people have solar panels on your roof? There you go, one person. So here's an opportunity for everyone, for all of you, to see how you can and are making a difference. And as our president, Keith Dahlbeck, reminds us in his newsletter column, this can also be thought of as a step towards a campaign for climate justice that says no to Duke Power and their proposed power line right-of-way, that it turns out will be taken the home of one of our members. UUA President Peter Morales is not our pope, but he is the leader of the Unitarian Universalist Association. So as we move into the second anecdote, remember his remarks when he calls restrictive voter rights laws pernicious mutant racism. I don't know that I'd ever be courageous enough to use that phrase in that way. And then he reminds us that on the issue of race, we see a resurgence of Jim Crow, we see mass incarceration of African Americans, attacks on voting rights, income inequality that crushes people of color. But then a paragraph later, what does he say? We should not ignore hopeful signs. And in that same paragraph, after talking about the return to Selma on the 50th anniversary, he puts us in similar company of those hopeful signs. The persistent commitment of so many Unitarian Universalists to the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina. On July 13th, we were there for the second time. 35 of us in the bus to Winston-Salem to join 6,000 people in a march organized by the NAACP as part of the Moral Monday Challenge to the Constitutionality of North Carolina's Voting Rights Act, which, by the way, has been called the country's worst voter suppression law. Tomorrow, the North Carolina Supreme Court will hear the case. Again, how did that happen? It was a group of fellow congregants who created the opportunity for each of us to do our part to make a difference. And it was you, as this congregation, that made and make such hopeful opportunities possible over and over again. When I march, I can't help but hear the voice that wonders what difference this is going to make anyway. But I know what difference it is making in the moment. Those of us who are there take heart. And after we leave, we know we are part of this larger caring. We are part of a larger heart. We literally take courage and hope with us, and it rises up in different moments and different situations throughout the week and the months and the days. Life feels better, maybe just a little bit, but it feels better and more real because we stood up and you stood up with us. There was action to our witness and it was immediate. Take a moment when you go online and call up the promo for the Journey for Justice walk that is going on now. And the clips are from that march in Winston-Salem, and you may recognize a blue t-shirt or two from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Hendersonville in that crowd. You can definitely recognize UUA President Peter Morales' flat-brimmed straw hat in the front. So just take a breath in this moment, in this morning, and know that you are growing, creating these opportunities for hope. As we have that sense and that energy, we remember Marlon Lavenhar's words that, yes, this church year stretches from the events of Ferguson, Missouri, to Charleston, South Carolina. The shootings at Emmanuel AME Church, Mother Emmanuel, in downtown Charleston happened on June 17th. Late the following week, I was asked to participate in an interfaith prayer service to be held on Monday, June 29th. I offered this sanctuary, but the organizers hoped it would be more central, and eventually it ended up at First Congregational Church. It was a wonderful, moving, well-organized service, all of us there as part of a larger community. I was asked near the end of the week to write a prayer for the service, and that was the last I heard, but when I arrived, they had cut out all of that because they realized it would go on forever if all of us did our thing. And I was asked to read a prayer and then volunteered to read a prayer in Spanish for someone who couldn't be there. But I'd like to share with you what I was going to say. It involved a promise that I wanted to make. Wow. And I wanted for us to make it as a community. Perhaps we can make it today if we dare. In those remarks, I made my commitment personal. And in that way, it seemed like I gave it a greater chance of sustaining something. Sit there and feel, remember back how immediate the shootings in Charleston were at the end of June. Think how distant they feel now. And even how surprised a little that you are that I'm bringing them up in this morning. By making the commitment personal, I say it seems like it has a greater chance of being sustained. It has a greater chance to move into love, and it seems that love gives it that chance of sustainability. And now, in looking back, I hear Pope Francis in Martin Luther King's words that I used. So imagine it. I step up to the podium, and I reach in my coat, because public prayer services, you better wear a coat and a tie. And I take out the notes that I used. They're still folded. I went back to find them. They're still folded in my coat pocket. Remember, this is a prayer service in Hendersonville. Interfaith, but a prayer service. So I step up to the podium, and I begin to read. I say, "Dear God, before I speak to you, I have something I need to say to those who were shot and killed." And then I read their names. I worked to memorize them, but in the space between, that's faded, you know? But it was Senator Clementa Pinckney, Cynthia Hurd, Tywanza Sanders, Sharonda Singleton, Myra Thompson, Ethel Lance, Susie Jackson, Reverend Daniel Simmons, and D. Payne Doctor. I said their names. Not Charleston 9, not the people who were killed in Charleston, but their names. And I said, "I am Jim McKinley. I am so sorry that your lives ended so suddenly and violently. Your loss is beyond my ability to address with words. But I would like to thank you for how you lived, for your influence in your families and communities and your church. I saw the way you influenced them by the way they responded through their loss and anger and grief. They modeled forgiveness and love with bravery and courage. Now I hear them speaking from their hearts and calling for us to take courageous action. The way they have honored you challenges us. and inspires me. And it invites me into your space of memory and action. I'm not sure what to do, but I now have a guide. You gave me one, Reverend Simmons. In your granddaughter, Elena, when she stood up and spoke at the court appearance of the shooter, she said, "We are here to combat hate-filled actions with love-filled actions. And that is what we want to get out to the world. We are here to combat hate-filled actions with love-filled actions, and that is what we want to get out to the world." I would suggest that is why we are here. Love-filled actions. Love-filled actions. Courageous love-filled actions. I will keep looking for them within the strong words of combat. In his eulogy given almost 52 years ago in 1963 for the four girls killed in the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. King said, "The victims say to each of us, black and white alike, that we must substitute courage for caution." We must substitute courage for caution. They say to us that we must be concerned not merely about who murdered them, but about the system, the way of life and philosophy which produced the murderers. I don't know how to do that. And we each have our own ideas of what's important, and it's so easy to talk and seem concerned and settle back into our comfort and cautions. That's the biggest threat to any of this and to your memory. It's us and our caution. And I'm scared that I won't do my part. So I promise to stay engaged. I promise to do my part, to stay connected in courage and community to your memory, finding and taking love-filled actions that are concerned about the system and our way of life. I'm afraid of making this promise. I don't know what to do, but I promise to keep at it, to persist in your memory and keep the space open for hope and possibility and change. And then I said, I'm going to ask these people too, all gathered here, to join me in their best intent. I said, it's a prayer service. I said, let us pray. Dear God of hope and courage and covenant and love-filled actions, help us keep our promise. May our forgiveness be tough and our caution replaced with courage. May our courage be sustained and our commitment endure. May our heart stay engaged in love and memory and action. And may we persist in our promise and by so doing discover new ways to make it real. We promise to do this. We promise to do our part in your name and their memory. This we covenant with ourselves and with you, O God, as together we say, Amen. Amen. Replace caution with courage and stay engaged. Look around the room. We can do it. It's what makes life meaningful. It's what is the answer to your problems and to your question, and to the Pope's question of what is it to be most fully human. So now that I've been considering that, I notice ways to connect and stay engaged. I see them when they happen. They come out in my eyes and I go, oh, I need to be a part of that. Participate in Black Lives Matter's movement. Do it through the Unitarian Universalist Association. Do it with a congregation in Asheville who's making it a focus. Plan the next bus to Raleigh. Just do that. Do it with Asheville. Do it with somebody else. Do it with the NAACP, you know? Let's just get going. Meet with, work with the NAACP here in Hendersonville. On Monday, I was getting acupuncture, and I'll explain that a little bit later, but my acupuncturist told me about a conference in Montreat this last weekend that he went to that's furthering the message, the dream of Martin Luther King, and John Lewis was there, and we didn't know about it. And so I'm going, wait, how did I miss that? And was beaten up on myself about it. And I went, no, you just notice it now. And you make those connections, you network, so that you don't miss that again. And you can go hear John Lewis say, I grew up as a young man getting in trouble. And then he says, I believe with all my heart, it's time for the churches to get in trouble. It's time for the churches to make trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble, changing trouble. And then you think about that and Martin Luther King's words, caution with courage, make trouble. So we'll do it again. I know I've already taken too long, but before I close today, I want to say a little bit about my sabbatical, which begins next week, and also about something about my own heart condition. And I won't take long. It's a heart story, because I know that all of us face these things with courage many times over, and we just may not recognize them as something we're doing, where we're facing things with courage. I also have begun to realize that every time you face an illness and make a decision to go on, you think, well, it's just your decision to survive. But it's more than that. It really is a statement, looking around this room, of intergenerational solidarity. You say, I'm going to stick around to keep creating these opportunities for the world to be different by being a part of a larger group that's doing that all the time. I'm going to make a difference. And so each time you face something that you think is just routine, but it takes courage, you're participating in that sense of solidarity about the world can be a better place. That's the nature of this faith and this group here. What's going on with me is that I had hernia surgery, and they discovered I had atrial fibrillation. The anesthesiologist handed me the paper as I woke up and said, you might want to see your GP about this. And so I did, and my GP said, well, you got it. Let's check you for thyroid disease first and do blood work. It's the first time in my life I ever went, man, I hope I have thyroid disease. Imagine that. I mean, that was going to be the good news. Well, so anyway, I tracked it through all the medical tests. And what happens is people say, how is your vacation? You having fun? Well, I can't really, you know, I don't want to, it's like somebody says, how are you? You don't want to go into the whole spiel, but you don't want to say, oh yeah, it's been a blast. But so what happens is I have entered the medical system, which how many of you know very well, you know, exactly. It's my first time in it, of being in it in a full way. So you've got more empathy coming from me. But what happens is that I have a leaky mitral valve, and that has created an enlargement of the left atrium, which has created atrial fibrillation. And the way, you can just watch that, but studies show your chance of survival is a lot better if you do something about it. But doctors suggest watching it and others don't, you know. Anyway, I'm choosing to go on and do something about it. And it turns out that I can have minimally invasive, robotically assisted surgery because I don't have other problems going on. And that means I don't have to have open heart surgery. It still means connection to the heart-lung machine, but it's through the side. So I have the best of Western medicine, the best possibility, and I have one of the best surgeons who's been doing it and trains others at St. Joseph's Emory. And if I don't go run screaming into the woods beforehand, I'm going there on September 21st. So what I wanted to share was, and then recovery is supposed to be, you know, a lot better than open heart. open heart surgery, and some of you have had that. So I understand that. So there are lots of things to say here about this and around it. I also treat this notion of my heart not just as a thing, you know? And so that's not easy. But I have a wonderful acupuncturist, Richard Kerber, who I go, well, I'm going to put this sort of vague notion of other energies and stuff in your hands while I do Western medicine, fix the problem kind of stuff. So I've got it both going on in case you're about to make recommendations to me about how to do these different things. And I really do think about it a lot. And Daniel Benavidez was in the hospital with similar heart problems to me, and I was visiting him. And we had this moment, and I didn't realize it till later, which you do too. It really is about intergenerational solidarity. It's about, I'm not ready to check out. We all go, I'm not ready to check out. We're here. But we just think of that as survival. But it's also, again, the statement of, I want to be around to help make a difference. It's not just to see and participate. I want to be around to help the world be better. And the reason is because there are children coming up that I want to see live in a better way. And every one of us in this room, when we're making those actions, are participating in those acts of solidarity. And I think it's important to notice it and feel it and be a part of it. Something larger than ourselves in our individual little lives, but they all come together in something bigger than we are, and we're making a difference through it. So I would say, I have new plans for sabbatical because it doesn't involve my physical plans or my travel plans. It's more rehab and then kind of life rehab for going on. And the board's been very helpful in working with me. So I would say, take care. And then what's the other phrase? Take heart. Have courage. What's the root of the word courage? Queer. Heart. And continue to grow and share your big-hearted hope. Thank you for how you share it with and for the world. Its beat is a hopeful sign.